And welcome back to the second half of Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis, and there is plenty more important information coming up, so please keep that pencil and recycled paper handy, and we're going to get right on into our commentary for today. Our commentary written by Chad Hansen and entitled Forest Timber for Power, a Bad Trade, Logging Public Land for Biomass Energy Would Misplace Priorities. And this appeared as an editorial in the Los Angeles Daily News. As other Western states begin to experience signs of the energy crisis wreaking havoc in California, a segment of the timber industry is attempting to cash in by expanding sales of biomass timber from national forests. In the history of bad ideas, logging millions of acres of our nation's priceless and irreplaceable national forest to provide taxpayer-subsidized energy stands out with particular distinction. Currently, biomass energy producers rely on burning waste paper, used wooden pallets from factories and construction sites, and agricultural residues for much of their supply. Now, in order to take advantage of the much-publicized energy crisis, biomass producers in the timber industry are joining forces to persuade federal officials to allow them increased access to public and national forests. And in other news, we read that three biomass producers in Northern California have shut down due to lack of wood waste. Getting back to the editorial, though only a tiny percentage of most states' energy supply currently comes from biomass logging on federal lands, the Biomass and Timber Alliance wants to expand such harvesting. The alliance even is attempting to put a green spin on its goals by claiming it will only harvest twigs, branches, and occasional saplings left by logging crews. The unvarnished truth is that biomass logging operations use heavy machinery to remove nearly all trees up to 4 feet in diameter. In so doing, they not only severely damage the fragile soil on the forest floor, but also obliterate the forest understory upon which entire plant and animal communities rely for survival. Prey species that live in the understory decline in numbers as a result, causing imperiled raptors such as hawks and owls and fur-bearing animals such as beavers, otters, and marten to starve and die off. With this past summer's wildfires still fresh in people's minds, logging companies in the U.S. Forest Service claim that biomass timber sales provide an important public service by helping to stop fires from occurring in national forests. When will they ever learn? Numerous government studies have concluded that commercial logging increases, not decreases, fire risk and severity. Forests need fire to return nutrients to the soil and facilitate growth of medium and large trees. Older trees have thick, fire-resistant bark and are usually not killed in forest fires. The Forest Service should be working to restore the rejuvenating ecological role of fire to forest ecosystems and educating homeowners in urban areas that border wild lands about simple steps they can take to coexist with wildfire. Instead, with the encouragement of the logging industry, the Forest Service is replacing its old misguided fire suppression policy with a new equally misguided fire-proofing strategy. Through biomass timber sales, the potential to remove nearly all of the small trees across millions of acres is real. It's the same old war on fire, but with a new twist. What's more, the great majority of these timber sales are deep in the forest, miles away from the nearest home. The Forest Service's own fire research station recently issued a report that found that the only effective way to protect homes near a national forest is to reduce the flammability of the home itself and its immediate surroundings within 125 feet. Unfortunately, in some national forests, biomass logging companies are also harvesting larger trees and actually increasing the risk of severe fires by reducing forest canopy closure, thereby creating hotter, drier conditions on the ground. Our federal forests are natural treasures, and they are public property that belongs to all of us. Are we really so short-sighted that we are willing to destroy federal public forests to provide a tiny fraction of our energy supply? What's next? Shall we also cut down trees in local public parks to burn for energy? Perhaps even the benches and picnic tables or anything else made of wood, like your hot tub deck. We should be focusing on conservation of energy and creating incentives for families that conserve, as well as developing truly renewable and non-destructive means of energy production, such as wind and solar power. Biomass logging of our national forests is not the answer. It is at best a profoundly misguided act of desperation and at worst a transparent example of government using a public emergency as an excuse to enhance the corporate bottom line. It should not be allowed. In the end, we as a society are not so poor that we must log our national forests, nor so rich that we can afford to. In this editorial by Chad Hansen from the Los Angeles Times, Chad Hansen is the executive director of the John Muir Project and is national director of the Sierra Club. Write him at John Muir Project, 30 North Raymond Avenue, Suite 512, Pasadena, California, 91103. That's the John Muir Project, 30 North Raymond Avenue, Suite 514, Pasadena, California, 91103. Or you can send email to Chad at Chad Hansen, C-H-A-D-H-A-N-S-O-N, at Juno.com. And moving back to activist news, a fur farm is raided in Finland for the fourth time. Finnish ALF-SG received the following anonymous report. Kari Konsti's fur farm, which is located near Tapalsari in southeast Finland, has been visited for the fourth time. The raid happened on February 10th. All of the foxes, about 40 of them, were dyed with a harmless 100% natural henna solution. All cages were cut open so the foxes could come out to the farm area. There was a fence surrounding the farm. The meaning of releasing the animals was to mix up the breeding. There were 6 sheds. The cages in them were damaged in a way that the farmer could no longer keep animals in them. Destroying the cages was done to cause economic damage to the farmer and to help him in his decision to stop fur farming. Holes were cut in the bottoms and sides of the cages, and the latches were cut off. Cages were made shapeless by twisting them, and some were pushed out of the sheds. Nearly all of the cages were destroyed. The animals did not have breeding cards. There were slogans painted already on the walls from previous raids, so there was no need to paint more. The conditions for the animals were horrible. Most of the animals did not have water, or it was frozen in the metal drinking cups. Hopefully, Konsti will now realize that he will not be left alone until he stops fur farming. The location of the farm is well known, and this raid will definitely not be the last one. And a ruling has ended Forest Service road closure in this story by Lance Robertson of the Register Guard. The government has no right to keep the public out of a national forest near Eugene, Oregon, where tree sitters have been protesting some planned logging, a federal magistrate in Eugene has ruled. U.S. Magistrate Tom Coffin, in a 9-page order issued this week, dismissed charges of illegally entering a closed area against 5 environmental activists, saying a U.S. Forest Service road closure order issued in 1999 was too broad and violated the activists' right of free speech and assembly. Protest activities at controversial logging sites are, quote, subject to First Amendment protection, Coffin said in his written order. The roads are public and, like the streets and sidewalks of a city, provide the type of setting where demonstrations and expressive activity occur. Judge Coffin said he isn't saying that the Forest Service can never limit access to these roads when circumstances so justify, but he said the 1999 closure order for the Clark timber sale was too broad, targeting environmentalists, and did not serve a legitimate purpose. The ruling will have more far-reaching implications than just the one timber sale southeast of Eugene, attorneys and defendants said. The Forest Service has issued similar closure orders for many other disputed logging sites throughout the West. Quote, this precedent-setting ruling is an affirmation that the First Amendment right to free speech and assembly is quintessential, said Lauren Regan, a Eugene attorney who defended the protesters. Quote, this is a decision that will rein back the Forest Service and stop it from using closure orders as a way to keep citizens from lawfully protesting and observing logging on national forests, Regan said. Sue Olson, a spokesperson for the Willamette National Forest in Eugene, said the agency is going to follow the judge's ruling. We will be rescinding the closure order. She said the Forest Service agency has no plans to issue a closure order for the Clark timber sale that would be narrow enough in scope to be lawful. Another federal judge's order in a separate case required the Forest Service to search for rare plants and animals in the Clark timber sale area before logging could begin. The surveys found nearly 4 dozen nests of the rare red tree vole, prompting questions about whether the site will ever be logged. The sale is a 96-acre tract in the Willamette Forest that was sold to Zippo Mills Incorporated of Eugene. Protesters have been perched in the old-growth trees there for almost 3 years. It's believed to be one of the longest continuous tree-sitting protests against old-growth logging, said Aaron Volheim of Cascadia Forest Defenders. No trees have been logged, and Zippo has been temporarily barred from cutting trees under a separate federal court order. In June 1999, Willamette Forest Supervisor Daryl Knops issued a closure order for the road leading to the logging site, citing the need to reduce vandalism, which has been a problem on the road since the tree sitters first moved into the area in the spring of 1998. The closure order allowed protesters to walk through the forest to where the tree sitters are, but they couldn't use the road. Since the order was issued, about 20 people have been cited for crossing or using the road. Five of the activists eventually challenged the constitutionality of the closure order. Five others cited either had their cases dealt with or had them delayed pending Coffin's ruling this week. The citations for violating the closure order carried a $500 maximum fine. One of the defendants, Lena Aguiloro, 21, said she was cited for crossing the road on her way to the tree sit. At the time, Aguiloro said she wasn't an activist involved in the campaign to support and to supply the tree sitters, but rather was interested in finding out more about the Clark timber sale and the issues surrounding the tree sit. In his ruling, Coffin said that because no logging was taking place at the site and because vandalism continues to occur, the closure invokes, quote, no government interest in protecting construction activity and equipment, nor in safeguarding protesters from injury from construction operations, unquote. Protesters' First Amendment rights, Coffin added, trump the interests of government preventing property damage through the mechanism of this blanket road closure. Regan said the ruling is one of a handful of federal court decisions issued during the past few years, giving protesters the right to gather and protest near logging sites. Forest Service has made frequent use of closure orders to keep protesters out of controversial logging sites. The Forest Service hasn't tried to roust the tree sitters from their platforms high in the forest canopy, but its law enforcement officers have confiscated numerous personal belongings of people on the ground who have set up support camps in the area. Olson, the Willamette Forest spokeswoman, said anyone who has had personal belongings confiscated by the Forest Service or other law enforcement agency officers in the Willamette National Forest should contact the Willamette National Forest to arrange for the return of their property. Coming up in Oregon, from February 26th through March 1st, is the third annual National Forest Protection Alliance Spring Strategic Retreat. Being held at Brighton Bush Hot Springs, the strategy session of the National Forest Protection Alliance will include the following topics: non-commercial restoration, building your state network, a review of the purpose and structure of the National Forest Protection Alliance, and the National Forest Protection and Restoration Act. Unfortunately, the registration deadline is passed, but you could try getting more information from NFPA. Their email address, nfpa@wildrockies.org, or you could call 406-542-7565. Once again, that Alliance retreat is February 26th through March 1st at Brighton Bush Hot Springs in Oregon. Maybe they have some space available. Who knows? Also coming up is the Land and Water Conference, Land, Air, and Water Conference in Eugene, Oregon, also known as ELAW. That's from March 1st through the 4th. Every year, students at the University of Oregon School of Law organize an environmental law conference which draws over 3,000 activists, not just lawyers, from around the country and the globe for a four-day series of panels and workshops on almost every environmental issue imaginable. It's the biggest annual gathering of its kind. This year, Cal U Wild Advisory Board member Terry Tempest Williams is one of the featured speakers. For the second year in a row, Cal U Wild will set up an information table with our sibling organization, Oregonians for Utah Wilderness. And more information, go to the ELAW site at www.pielc.uoregon.edu. That's pielc.uoregon.edu for more information. And right after the ELAW conference is the Umpqua Gathering from March 5th through 12th. Come spend a day or a week at the Umpqua National Forest for training, workshops, and discussions on forest defense. Music by Danny Dolinger, and you'll hear more Danny Dolinger at the end of the show. Speakers include the Umpqua Watersheds on the Soda Springs Dam. There's some other workshops tentatively planned, include security, primitive skills sharing, gender discussion, women's self-defense, direct action trainings, climbings, blockadings, and campaign updates, rural outreach, wild foods and herb walks, hikes to threaten timber sales. They do need help. They need food donations and transportation. The location is being kept secret for now. If you do want to go, bring what you'll need. It's likely to be raining or snowing. For more info, email trees4umpqua at yahoo.com. That's trees, the number 4, Umpqua, U-M-P-Q-U-A, at yahoo.com. Or you can call 1-888-PICKAXE. That's 1-888-P-I-C-K-A-X-E. Or you could, if you're local, you can call 541-607-0888. That's 541-607-088. Or look for the Canopy Action Network table at the ELAW conference. Once again, the Umpqua Gathering, March 5th through 12th. If you're looking for Robert Hoyt, he's going to be in Arcata, California at the Muddy Waters Coffee House on the 25th of February. He'll be moving to Roseburg, Oregon, the Umpqua Brewery at 8 p.m. on the 28th. March 1st, he'll be in Eugene, Oregon at 9 p.m. at Sam Bond's Garage. And on the 6th of March, he'll be in Salem, Oregon at 9 p.m. at the Bistro of the Willamette University. Check out Robert Hoyt. He had a great little gathering down here in Santa Cruz last weekend. You want more information, visit his website, www.enviroweb.org/Robert Hoyt. That's H-O-Y-T. Looking for Casey Neal or the Casey Neal Trio? Well, the best place to look for them will be in Belleville, Ohio at the Belleville Opera House. That's the corner of Route 13 and Route 97. On March 3rd, if you want more information about that Belleville, Ohio Casey Neal Trio update, that's 419-522-5058. That's 419-522-5058. And other upcoming dates in March are March 7th in Athens, Ohio at O'Hooley's Pub, and March 8th in Columbus, Ohio. He'll be opening for Sharon Shannon. It doesn't say where. Check out Casey Neal's new CD, Portland West, recorded live at St. John's Pub. It'll be released shortly. Moving to Southern California, the United States Forest Service is holding public meetings to address the need for amendments to the Southern California Forest Land Management Plans. There's a number of ongoing meetings. Meetings coming up for the Angeles National Forest are Tuesday, February 27th at the Glendora Public Library in Glendora, California at 6 p.m. Saturday, March 3rd at the Lancaster City Park in Lancaster, California at 1 p.m. And Tuesday, March 6th at the Valencia High School in Valencia, California, at 6 p.m. And I'll announce further meetings for the Angeles National Forest next week. For the Cleveland National Forest of Southern California, their next meeting is Tuesday, February 27th at the Julian Town Hall in Julian, California. Wednesday, February 28th at the Ramona Community Center in Ramona, California, at 6:30 to 9 p.m. And Tuesday, March 6th at the Pine Valley Improvement Club in Pine Valley, California from 6:30 to 9 p.m. And again, there's more meetings after that. I'll let you know about those next week. For other meetings in the Los Padres National Forest, the next meeting is Tuesday, February 27th in Rancho Del Rey. And that's in Oak View, California from 6 to 9 p.m. Wednesday, February 28th at the Fraser Park Community Hall in Fraser Park, California from 6 to 9 p.m. Tuesday, March 1st at the Salinas Community Center, Sherwood Hall in Salinas, California from 6 to 9 p.m. And Tuesday, March 6th in the South County Regional Center of Arroyo Grande, again from 6 to 9 p.m. Moving to the Riverside County San Bernardino National Forest. Their next meeting is Wednesday, March 7th at the Anza Community Building in Anza, California from 6 to 8 p.m. And in San Bernardino County, for the San Bernardino National Forest, they're having a meeting Tuesday, March 6th at the Mountain Communities Senior Citizen Center in Twin Peaks, California from 6 to 9 p.m. and at the Big Bear Municipal Water District on March 8th in Big Bear from 6 to 9 p.m. And there are more meetings. I will read more of those next week. And the infamous salvage rider rears its ugly head again. Help stop the old-growth logging at the North Windberry timber sale. When someone in the U.S. Forest Service plays fast and loose with the rulebook, it gives the entire agency a black eye. That's the case with the North Windberry timber sale in Oregon. In its final chapter, the infamous salvage rider instructed the Forest Service to offer purchasers of several dozen timber sales off-limits because of habitat for threatened marbled murrelets, replacement sales of like kind and volume. The original sales with marbled murrelet habitat were mostly mature second growth from Oregon's Suislaw National Forest, but in seeking replacement timber, forest managers on the nearby Willamette National Forest decided the salvage rider offered a good opportunity to log 500-year-old trees. That was fine with the sale's original purchaser, Scott Timber Company, which would profit by exchanging its Suislaw second growth for some of the biggest and most valuable old growth trees in the world. By any measure, though, it would count as a loss for the American public. The Willamette National Forest chutzpah earned the Oregon congressional delegation's wrath in a letter from Senator Ron Wyden and four of Oregon's five House members. They insisted that, quote, suitable second growth should be the primary target for replacing Suislaw sales and that old growth should be used only as a last resort. Forest Service Deputy Chief Jim Furnish, formerly the Suislaw Forest Supervisor, said, I agree that unless no other option exists, the Forest Service should not offer old-growth trees from the Willamette National Forest as replacement volume for second-growth trees from the Suislaw National Forest. He instructed officials to substitute timber that is most similar in kind and type for the original Suislaw trees. But the Willamette's timber managers chose not to get the message. In an in-your-face internal memo, they claimed that no alternatives to North Windberry exist, because Scott Timber Company will, quote, not agree to other options or areas. Who's in charge of our national forests anyway, Scott Timber or the Forest Service? You want to help to save those 500-year-old trees at North Windberry? Write, call, or email the Forest Service's regional forester, Harv Forsgren. That's Harv Forsgren. Tell him to insist that the Willamette play by the rules, save the old growth, and save North Windberry. Here's his address, Harv Forsgren, regional forester, U.S. Forest Service, P.O. Box 3623, Portland, Oregon, 97208. Once again, that's Harv Forsgren, Regional Forester, U.S. Forest Service, P.O. Box 3623, Portland, Oregon, 97208. Or you can send email to H. Forsgren, H-F-O-R-S-G-R-E-N, at fs.fed.us. And of course, you can always give him a call. His number, 503-808-2200. That's 503-808-2200. Well, that's about it for news. To get news or announcements from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, send us email at cruzef@cruzio.com. That's C-R-U-Z-E-F @cruzio.com. Or you can send letters to Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Once again, the address, Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And please be sure to send those announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. If you want more in-depth news and information about the Earth First movement, please subscribe to the Earth First Journal. Their current address is Post Office Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. But they're moving in a month, but maybe if you write soon, they'll transfer you down. Once again, the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. And you can listen to Earth First Radio live on your computer. We're at www.microradio.net/FRSC. If the streaming happens to be up at the moment you dial in on your computer. Anyway, we're live Thursday nights at 8 p.m. Pacific Time. You can always find archive Earth First Radio shows on the World Wide Web at www.radioforall.net. That's www.radio, followed by the number 4, all.net. Earth First Radio is carried on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations, and we just picked up 102.9 out there on the East Coast somewhere. Not exactly sure what town it's in, but they were nice enough to email the frequency, 102.9. So if you're listening on 102.9 to Earth First Radio, thank you for listening. And please ask your local pirate or non-commercial station to rebroadcast Earth First Radio. Earth First Radio is produced in the wonderfully large Mega Studio A of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney off of the CD Keep It Wild. I'm Uncle Dennis, and I want to thank you for listening to Earth First Radio. And we're going to listen to more music here. This one's off of a CD by Lone Wolf Circles and Friends called Oikos, Songs for the Living Earth. And this one's called The War to Save the Wilderness.
Stripped to the wood, stripped to the bone. She's had enough, so just leave her alone. Astounding beauty. Poison carelessly. Oh, protectors of the white and free, who stand their ground against the greed, who salute you in your heroic deed in the war to save the wilderness.
To the rocks of the sacred sweat lodge, we add sage to cleanse the inner self. We burn cedar and copal and make prayer to the four directions and to the earth of which we are a part. We make prayer to the spirit shining like a light in every blade of mesa grass, stirring the wind into vigorous circles. And we ask forgiveness, forgiveness of the mountains and the seas, the plants and the animals, and the indigenous peoples of every continent. Forgiveness for what our people have done to this earth, and also forgiveness for what we as warriors have yet failed to do. And we give thanks to you.
Here we heal and here we hide. Here we reach down deep inside. As we heal, and so does she. And as she heals, and so do we.
War to save the wilderness.